Or not. Well.
Take two.
Take two. Take two of stealing music again. Oh, hello.
ESPN's music.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play podcast. third this week, third in a row.
Passionate.
Purely because there's just a massive amount of content going on at the moment. It's probably going to get actually worse because NFL's going to start soon. But this pod's about the first round of the 2020 NBA playoffs. So
the very, very strange, lockdown playoffs in Orlando.
Yeah, very strange, but I guess it depending on which series you're talking about. A lot of it was straightforward. A lot of it just went holy hell. So
no, that's right. I think the first round in the East went according to plan. Would have thought that the 4-5 matchup between Miami and Indiana was going to be a little bit more fun than what it was. It was pretty clear that, yeah, the best four teams, you know, went through in fairly straightforward fashion.
Yeah, and that's pretty evident. If we start in the East, that was definitely pretty evident for the East at least anyway. I mean, if we go one through to four, the first one was Milwaukee and Orlando. Orlando taking it at Milwaukee taking it in five games.
Well, they were really the only team that had any sort of home court, hometown advantage.
And used it in that first game, I guess, if you really want to put it that way. They were, you know, winning 122 to 110 in that first game was, oh my God. Like, I mean, it's like, wow, if we look at both the two biggest teams, even in the Western Conference, LA lost their first game, which we'll talk about later.
That's right. Look, I don't think the Bucks were going to be in any danger of losing this series or anything like that. But you know, if you cast your mind back a little bit over 12 months ago, and the 1-8 match, I think it was the 1-8 match with Orlando. It might have been the 2-7 last year with Orlando and Toronto, and you know, Orlando sprung a game on Toronto. I think it was the opening game of the series on a DJ Augustine three, like buzzer beater. So
yeah.
I don't think it was going to go anything sort of in that sort of fashion. But you know, Vucevic, massive. Like he was huge in this whole series for Orlando, and pretty much he was the only guy that was showing up. You know, night in and night out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I took away from that series. Is obviously, you know, like we just said, expected the Bucks to win, but Vucevic was amazing, especially in that first game. What did he get? 35 points, 14 rebounds. So
five threes as well. It was just they did super well and sort of, I guess, sprung, you know, a little bit of a surprise on the Bucks. But the rest of the series, I guess, sort of, yeah, like we said, you know, they held serve and went according to plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, game two, not really a whole lot to sort of speak about. Orlando in that first quarter in game two only scored 13 points, so they didn't really get off to the greatest start in the world. So that sort of, I guess, sort of stunted them. And then for the entire game, they only shot 35% from the field. So that wasn't going to help them either. You know, game three, Milwaukee shot the lights out. I think made 17 threes. Giannis was massive. Didn't really see a lot of Chris Middleton in this season until we got to game four and game five. He sort of decided to show up then. So I'm not sure what your thoughts are of Middleton being that second guy, you know, in the clear
He's supposed to be the second guy, but he, like you said, it took him a while. I think it took him up to, I think it was game three or four, I believe.
Game four, he came out and he just erupted. You know, he scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. Of game four. So it just the way that he sort of had come across. he'd been a little bit lackluster, even in the eight games leading up to it. There was a few games that Giannis was rested, and it just, yeah, it's, I mean, it was up to Chris Middleton to sort of take up the slack.
Yeah, and look, he did in that game four, like you said, but you know, he just didn't, you know, for a number two, as you sort of want to call it, I don't think he took it up well in that series enough. Like you said, that last two games, even that last game, he got 21 points as well, but. This
should have been a series where he sort of stamped his mark as saying, yes, I am the number two. So he gets that little bit of confidence going into the next series, into the semifinals.
I don't like him as a number two personally, if I'm comparing him to Eric Bledsoe. Personally,
Eric Bledsoe sort of has his moments in and out of games. Giannis was named. He was named Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know,
what did you think of that?
I guess it was between him and Anthony Davis. So
yeah. It wasn't a shock, but it wasn't. I suppose we don't really think of his defense, you know, defensive prowess that much, so to speak.
No, but I mean, he's long and athletic. He slides well. He's good in pick and roll defense. So, you know, you can't really sort of have that mismatch. You know, he can guard pretty much 1 through 5. So I think that's that he's got that versatility there, and he's a decent rim protector.
The other thing, I guess, sort of when I sort of delved deep into the Magic, after the first game anyway, just with Vucevic, Magic did it really well. So they signed him for a 4-year, $100 million contract, which, you know, unfortunately, it sounds like a lot in these days. It's sort of pittance in the NBA.
Well, that's right. That's probably about what he's worth. Like, you see a lot of teams paying overs.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant.
That's 25 mil a season. That's about what he's worth.
But they've done smart. They've done, you know, they've gone on age. So he's 28 million in the first year, and then it just declines by 2 million in each year. So where it's the other way, where they usually backload it.
That's right. They back end the deals, and then
haven't back ended here. His last year will be 22. So
he's going to make $45 million or $43 million in the last year of his contract. So
yeah,
they've worked that deal smart. Just, you know, sort of in contrast to this series, you know, just as a whole, you know, like we said, didn't really sort of surprise anybody. You know, maybe that first game, they're the only team, you know, that was a lower seed that won games. All the rest of the other games, all the other series are all sweeps. So, it is what it is with Orlando. They need to sort of go out there and address, you know, getting Vucevic some help Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, those guys that they've got. Obviously Aaron Gordon wasn't there, but Evan Fournier, he sort of went missing for Orlando in this series. Like, he'd been pretty good throughout the year, throughout the regular season, and even in the eight restart games, you'd think they'd sort of have that the ability to sort of go out there and maybe attract, you know, a mid-level guy to sort of to give them a hand.
I think they're going to need to. I don't know what happens with Aaron Gordon. I don't know if he's the player that they think he is. I don't know.
It's sort of that kind of player where you know you hear of his athletic feats, but you don't hear a lot of him having, you know, these gigantic 40-point games where he's lighting it up. He's getting six threes, or, you know, he's do you know what I mean? Like, that's how his game sort of comes across as. He might be, whether he's a mid-range player or as a better on the slash and getting to the cup a lot. So I think there's only so much you can sort of expect out of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I just don't know if it's the right move. It's the right move personally for Orlando moving forward, but I think he's up to this contract year personally. So I just don't know what they do and where it sort of leads them. That's pretty much sort of the main thing I'm sort of taking away from it.
and that's the thing. The last few years, they sort of scraped into the playoffs. This year they were sort of in a fight with Brooklyn for the 7 and 8 spot. I guess not so much sort of pooed the bed, but they definitely had a chance to win a few games in this restart. And take that 7 seed away from Brooklyn and get away from playing Milwaukee, but it happened, and that's just what they had to deal with.
I guess speaking of the next one, then the Toronto Raptors and Brooklyn Nets. I don't think it would have mattered anyway. They swept the Nets. 4 games. High scoring, all 4 games.
Oh, it's my just, Lord.
It just tended to be very, very easy. It seemed easy, even though they were sort of, it was close, but it just seemed easy for each game.
Very, very lopsided. Fred VanVleet was massive in this series. Yeah. I think throughout the series he was 19 of 34 from 3 for the series. Yeah. They didn't really have to use him too much in game 4 because they had that game well in hand. They had a little issue. I think it was in game 4 as well, where Kyle Lowry sort of rolled his ankle, but he seemed to be fine. He's playing in the next series against Boston. So I think the one close game that they had was game 2. I think it ended 104-99, and Brooklyn were actually up in the fourth quarter with about 8 minutes to go.
Yeah,
and they sort of, I guess they, not so you can't say they sort of choked it away, but that's the game that you've just got to hold serve and hang on to, and then they just got, I guess they just got overwhelmed, by a much better and well-rounded team.
Well, Norman Powell sort of overwhelmed them. You know, he got 24 points in that game, which was. I mean, that's the sort of thing I took away from that series is there's multiple, it's not just one or two, there's multiple players that can put up 10, 20 points. Serge Ibaka put up 20 points.
Serge Ibaka was good in that season. He came off the bench.
So, Pascal was just doing what Pascal's done all year. So, add VanVleet and then this Norman Powell, they can all share the points around, which is really good.
And Obi, he's finally back and healthy. They've got a fairly deep team, their next opponent is Boston in the conference semi, so that should be an interesting series.
Very interesting.
The only thing is, for me, I sort of took away with Brooklyn was the emergence of Caris LeVert. I think everybody's seen that this year, that he's a really good player. With the in and out, obviously with Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant sitting the whole season, Spencer Dinwiddie being in and out of that side with injury. He was pretty much the mainstay, him and Joe Harris, Jared Allen, the center. They were your mainstays in that, but he looked at, when called upon a lot of the time, he delivered.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, having that new coach there and Steve Nash, which will firstly be interesting, but secondly, I think Steve Nash will see something in him. Obviously Kyrie and Kevin Durant are definitely going to want the ball, but I think he'll see enough in him to sort of keep him there, at least to give him that minutes that he needs.
He deserves to stay in that role and to keep those starters minutes even when, and be a part of that starting five when, they're full strength with Kevin Durant, with Kyrie Irving next year. So he absolutely has deserved that the way that he's played this year. I just hope that, his development as a player doesn't get stunted by, I guess it's going to be the sheer ball dominance that KD and Irving are going to create.
Yeah.
Because it's just the ball is not really going. I don't know. Hopefully Steve Nash can sort of get them to play a more style of game like he does, with a little bit of ball movement, where otherwise it's going to get very – and they're two unbelievably unstoppable players, but it's going to get very stagnant over a full 82 games if they're all healthy and the ball doesn't move.
Basically,
you're somebody else on that team, it's going to get stagnant real quick.
a la what happened with him in Boston and Jason Tatum. Once he left and Jason Tatum stood up, that's, you know.
Right, he flourished so, again.
And, you know, and same as, you know, as well as Jared Allen, I think I'm glad he got sort of game time because he, to me, he is a great center. He's a very, very good center. You know, I don't like the one that they, you know, the friend that they brought for $10 million a year, but they just, yeah, they have a good team. They have a good team. I mean, unfortunately, KD and Kyrie weren't there, but if they were there, this, yeah, this team could, will definitely do things in that East. Hugely do things in the East.
No, and I think we said it before too. I think, yeah, the unceremonious firing of Kenny Atkinson, I thought was a little out of the blue.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen what they could have done with him and the KD and Kyrie pairing. Mm-hmm. But they obviously sort of, you know, nipped that in the bud fairly quickly. And, you know, it took them a long time to sort of to make this appointment of Steve Nash. But, yeah, and with no, you know, with no coaching experience or anything like that, but I think it's a ballsy move.
I think so. I think it's a very ballsy move. I just the no coaching experience for me.
A lot of people sort of in NBA circles say that it's more to connect with the superstar rather than X's and O's.
Yeah, yeah, it's possible, like a man manager, I suppose.
Yeah,
so,
that's right. Yeah, he'll have some. You'd think he'd have some good schemes that he would like to implement, but you'd think you'd want somebody who's had a little bit of at least assistant experience.
Oh, he's going to have a huge coaching roster. He's going to
he's going to have his work cut out for him. But yeah, I think he's going to be in there as a man manager. So, to try and connect, not bad.
But
I mean, we know that that KD and Kyrie are they're strange cats. So if he can connect with them and get them having fun, and playing well, then it could be just an absolute stroke of genius.
Well, and that again, you're segueing so well. Well, I'm just piggybacking off your segue. It's possibly the same what they need for the next series with 76ers. The 76ers, yes, lost, got swept easily by the Celtics. And then on the back of that, obviously, then they lost Brett Brown as a coach to 76ers. Same sort of thing, same sort of what you're saying. Do they need, you know, is that pairing of Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons just not good enough? Or do they need like a man manager in there to sort of... you know, to control the completely different Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Don't get me wrong.
I think that might be an X's and O's type thing where you have to try and manage those two while they're on the floor and not get them to clog up the lane, which is essentially what they do when both of them are on the floor a lot. It's, you know, Embiid is a dominant post player.
Yeah.
You know, one of the few that's actually in the league at the moment where he can sort of be that inside and outside threat. Like he's got a good stroke from 3-point. I don't think his percentage was very good this year. He's essentially doing too much work on this squad. Like they lost Ben Simmons before this series, so it was always going to be a struggle for them to be able to do anything against, you know, a fairly high-powered Boston.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, yeah, Boston, you know, just the emergence of the Boston players alone, even if you want to sort of take it from that, like they always were sort of good, but your Jaylen Brown, your Jason Tatum, your Kemba Walker as well, Marcus Smart, they have a very, very good team. I mean, unfortunately, I still think they're short in the center, personally, but you know, I guess on the back of those four, especially Marcus Smart's defense, they could easily win the next series.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They could be in for another date in the Eastern Conference Finals. They did lose Gordon Hayward.
Yes.
It looks like a 3 to 4 week injury, that ankle that he rolled. So that's probably not great for them, but that's. It's good for them in a sense that once he does come back in, you've got that extra bit of firepower with him. You hope it doesn't upset the chemistry that it's got with the rest of the team at the moment. So, you know, Tatum is didn't start off in the restart very well, but he's starting to find his groove and hit his straps a little bit.
Well, he is that to me. I mean, he has to be. I think he is the superstar in Boston.
Well, he's the alpha there. I think they brought in Kemba as to maybe be, you know, that 1A to Tatum's one. Like Kemba is more of a ball dominant point guard. You know, he only averages about 5 or 6 assists a game, so that he's going to be more your scoring type point guard rather than your distributor.
I think if I'm looking at the 76ers sort of coming into next year, as much as they say sort of stuff about him, I think you'd be absolutely ludicrous of getting rid of Joel Embiid if you have to break that team up. And I don't think
they will. I think the new coach is going to have the three big guns there. They're going to have Tobias Harris,
that's the problem.
Joel Embiid,
not Tobias Harris as a person, but what they paid Tobias Harris. That's what I think they've screwed up.
The contract is a little high. Well, this series, he hit 2 triples and didn't hit any in the last 3 games. That just simply cannot happen.
No, it cannot.
With Ben Simmons gone, he can't go absent like that, especially in trying to stretch the floor. He just cannot go missing like that.
He's unfortunately on too much money to go missing like that.
That's right.
They all are. Joel and so is Ben Simmons. I mean, even
Joel
and as much as
putting up numbers in that series, he put up 30 and 12.
Joel had
decent numbers. Unfortunately, he had 15 turnovers in that series as well in 4 games, which isn't terrific. But everything is going through him. That's the he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. So, turnovers are going to be part of what happens. But I think that's part of the problem there. I just don't know who they're going to hire.
Even the Al Horford signing just perplexes me. I don't think Al Horford's a brilliant player. I just don't
think
he's
suited
for his squad.
So they didn't have to worry about him stopping Joel Embiid. That's the only reason they signed him. Happened last year when he played for Boston. He was the Embiid stopper, and that's the only reason they signed him. If he's on our squad, then we don't have to worry about him, being a roadblock for us. Injury and derailed their season. So it's being a Jekyll and Hyde as well. With their horrendous record on the road, they only had 12 wins, 12 and 26 on the road.
Yeah,
and 2 losses at home. So that's 4 losses at home. So that can't happen either. If you're going to be successful, you've got to have a better percentage. Than 33% on the road, especially against Eastern Conference teams.
The next one was, I was shocked. Not so much that Miami won, but Miami swept the Pacers. It was all their youngsters. They've good core: Tyler Hero, Bam Adebayo, Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson. They all sort of played a key part in that game. In all games.
I had high hopes for this series. I was hoping it might have been a 6 or 7 game series, but Miami were just completely dominant in that series, and they didn't take the foot off the throat at all.
Right, and I think they're just letting I've listened to a couple of podcasts about him. This is Jimmy Butler. Basically, he knows he's a bit of a prick, and that's what happened at 76ers. But he just said with Miami,
Minnesota.
He said Miami, I can be Jimmy Butler. Yeah, okay, I'm like this, but I can do that here. And it's clearly working.
It sounds like they don't have a bunch of snowflakes there either that have a bit of a boo-hoo if Jimmy gets stuck into them.
Well,
and calls them out, which is what he was doing at Minnesota. He basically called out Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And he did the same thing in Philadelphia. He was calling people out on what they were doing. That might have been more so the coach than the players, but he's come into there. He's got that mentality. Wants to win. And then that's such a bogus narrative to sort of everybody wants to win. Do you know what I mean? Like that's
it's a pretty bored
when they say that sort of stuff. Yeah. That's just BS. Like nobody goes out there to lose. Like they're ultra competitive people.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. But I also liked oh my god, I've just lost his name now. Also like Goran Dragic.
Dragic has been good. Like he's been their stable, you know, their stable guy. Whether he's coming off the bench or starting. Like, he's been, since he's come back from injury and he's had a, you know, probably a season and a half of being inconsistent and being in and out. But now that he's back and looks like he's healthy, he's, this is probably one of the better stretches that he's had in his career.
And seems to relish off the bench. I you know,
doing your job. It's about doing your job. At least, the NBA, like, it really shouldn't matter. Whether you're starting or whether you come off the bench, like, you know, look at guys like Jamal Crawford, Lou Williams, those type of guys that Dennis Schroeder this year, it doesn't matter whether you're coming off the bench. It just means that you don't get to hear your name in the introduction.
No, that's right.
At the start of a game. Like that's all it is. If you're still going to play 30 to 35 minutes and put up numbers, who gives a crap if you start or not?
The other thing within that series is that I guess it hasn't been talked about that much, but the decent 28 minutes or so that Andre Iguodala's been playing in each game, which seems to help. He just does what he needs to defensively. And of course, he's got that veteran experience, especially in the finals. Yeah, it's...
Well, he's been brought in as your stopper as well. So, you know, he's been brought in for later on, later on in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. And it's working for them. Yeah, there wasn't much to talk about in that. It's just how brilliant, like, their 1-10... 12 players that for Miami played.
It was unfortunate too because, you know, Indiana sort of finished fairly well in those restart games, ended up snaring the four spot by a win. You know, they had 45 wins, Miami had 44. But in the end, you know, being swept and it essentially cost Nate McMillan his job.
Well, and, you know, speaking of teams that are blowing up, I think that it's possible that team needs a couple of changes. I mean, Oladipo, don't get me wrong, is still, he's probably not going to be the same as he was before. He wasn't too bad, but.
That's right. But he's an all-star. Like he's, if he gets back to anywhere near what his potential has shown, then you can, he's sort of shown that you can build a decent team around him. Like, you know, 45 wins is nothing to sneeze at, whether it's in the Eastern Conference or not.
Yeah.
You know, with him being essentially not there for a lot of that season, like Malcolm Brogdon, did well in sort of leading that team around. You know, Miles Turner was pretty inconsistent throughout the year.
He needs to move. It's either him or Damascus.
I hear rumblings around the place that he could be on the trade chopping block. So, I don't know really what to think of him. You know, a decent scorer, probably not the greatest rebounder in the world. I think he could be a high energy sort of player, but. Whether or not he's happy there in Indiana or not, I'm not 100% sure. You know, he might need a change of scenery.
I don't think he is. I think he, he's not happy when Domantas Sabonis is on the court, they just don't gel together well, even though they're two great players.
Sabonis not being there for this series as well really hurt them.
Yeah, big time. He was great this year.
That's right. He was an all-star this year. You know, he's definitely him and Oladipo and Brogdon are going to be the building blocks there to build their team around. I think that might have been one of the reasons why Nate McMillan did get sacked is he just couldn't make that pairing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, you know, speaking of team, I guess Brogdon has got paid, you know, I guess, to, you know, enough money to lead that squad and just didn't sort of come up with it. So that was the other thing I sort of took out with it.
Well, one thing before we move on to the West, like just in the game three, like Malcolm Brogdon, which I thought was a bit of a strange stat that had come out, like it was the first Indiana player in their franchise history to have a 30-point, 10-assist game.
Really?
Which, that's, I mean, that doesn't seem like gigantic numbers, but to be able to combine the two is a good effort. But, you know, Indiana's been around for a long time.
So, you know, the first Indiana player ever.
In the playoffs. To have
no
Reggie Miller, no Mark Jackson, no Jalen Rose.
Reggie at least.
Reg, you just, you know, shoot some more. I'll have some more show. I don't think Reg was the greatest passer in the world.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he would have got the points easily. I would have thought he would have assisted the ball, but clearly.
Yeah, the ten assists. Yeah, the 10 assists is always going to be the problem.
Yeah. So move on to the West. The 1-8 was the Lakers against the Trailblazers. Everyone lost their minds in the first game.
I was just about to say, everybody lost their freaking mind when Portland come out and did what they did. Everybody lost it, and everyone's like, oh my God, Portland's going to do this. Not could Portland do this, like Portland is going to do this. It's like, oh, for God's sakes, like, come on.
Chuck on TNT said that, you know, he brought the broom out and said they're going to sweep them. Everyone went ballistic, and then the first game was great. They were great. You know, Lillard, you know, had that sort of hype going into that first game, and then justified it, you know, getting his 34 points and just literally just shooting from anywhere he just seemed to feel.
No, well, and that's right. And that sort of game and that sort of hot streak can only go on for so long. Like, once you start to, those shots will only, it will continue to fall for a little while, but it's not the best way to be playing. Like, he's riding the hot streak, but once you start to cool off, then you've got to go back to your original system. Yeah, you know, you've got two other guys, you've got three other guys on that squad. You've got Jusuf Nurkić, you've got Carmelo Anthony, and you've got CJ McCollum.
Yeah. Exactly. Jusuf Nurkić actually had a good series, even though they did lose. Considering he was coming back from injury, he was pretty good in that series.
No, he was really well.
The second game, that 23-point win, it's just Lakers did what Lakers have been doing.
That's right. We're always going to do. They're always going to get stuck right into Portland. I guess it was just a wake up call for LA. In that first game, AD didn't look very good, but LeBron had a triple double. Game two, they beat the living out of Portland, but you didn't get a lot of contributions from Danny Green and Kyle Kuzma. They're still without Rajon Rondo. They don't have Avery Bradley. So they're getting healthier as the playoffs go along.
The Rajon one's killing him, I think. The Rajon Rondo one, I think.
But he'll be back for the next series. So
Caldwell Pope's playing pretty. You know, he played pretty consistent enough in the point there. But I just having that his vision, just Rondo's vision.
No, that's right. Yeah, you know, and playoff Rondo will make an appearance sooner rather than later. But even if you go to game two, you know, Damian Lillard dislocated a finger on his left hand, so that shouldn't really affect him too much. You know, that's your cradle hand, that's not your shooting hand, so you wouldn't have thought that would have affected him too much. Game three, Portland really struggled to score. Portland only ended up having 8 points off the bench. That can't happen. They need more production, other than just their starters. And also they got, you know, LA shot like 43 free throws. So the whistles were obviously going their way as well. So in game four and game five, they weren't even really close. I don't think, you know, Portland they run out of gas, at the end there. I think they lost by 20. In game four, Anthony Davis in game five, has a 20-point third quarter. They didn't have Damian Lillard because in that game four, he sort of had a bit of a stumble and hurt his knee. So that sort of, I guess, ended his playoff run. And it was always going to be a struggle to replace, you know, that scoring and that sort of dominance that Lillard brings. Even Carmelo Anthony was pretty good in that game five. Just not Damian Lillard good.
No, that's exactly right. I did think over the series, but just for Lakers in general, they their 3-point percentage in the whole series was only 34.3%, which out of all the eight teams in the West, they were the ones that I guess shot the worst, you know, against their opponents. So with Portland having 37.9, so they do have, I guess, a little bit of the shooting disadvantage at the 3-point line, but you know, in hindsight, when you've got, you know, offensive weapons like Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
No, that's right.
And JaVale McGee, to an extent, it's sort of, yeah.
Yeah, he's not going to dominate for you, but he's not going to dominate. And that's the other thing, too. You know, they haven't, you know, with Dwight Howard, like it's been JaVale McGee. Like, you know, Dwight Howard's sort of been a bit of a dick throughout this sort of restart. Yeah. So, I think he's sort of starting to pay for that a little bit. So he could have really come in handy as being that extra rebounder. So we'll see what happens when they, you know, they'll have Houston in the next series. So that could be a train wreck, or you know that could be a super fun fast series.
It's going to be a high-scoring series. I mean, probably defensive train wreck aside, I would say. True. But it's going to be an interesting series because of the dynamics of your two, well, your top two from each teams, really, isn't it? LeBron and AD versus Westbrook and Harden. So
no, that's right.
Really, again, like, and we'll wait. I guess till that series is over. But AD should just stand in the middle and not have to move because he's going to be the tallest player against Houston.
No, that's right. LeBron's going to be the tallest player, you know, taller than you know everybody on Houston except for Tyson Chandler, who's bench riding. So, you know, that's 6'8". Like he's probably he'd have 2 inches on PJ Tucker.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we'll talk about him in a sec because we'll give him credit. They did close out the series. But the next one was the Clippers and the Mavericks. So the Clippers, I'll tell you what, they were running scared for a bit. They end up winning in six, but, I thought Mavericks really, really, firstly scared of them and had a real chance of winning it.
No, absolutely. Like, it basically come down to, you know, Kristaps Porzingis going down. You know, he got hurt in game three. Yeah, and that was pretty much going to be all she wrote. It was going to be all on the shoulders of Luka Doncic. Yeah. You know, he hit that mad buzzer beater in overtime as on a step back, 28 footer, to get that game three. Game four win.
Yeah.
To keep him alive a little bit. That's sort of tied up.
There's no COVID rules when you hit a buzzer beater like that. Everyone's just like bowled to him.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he just got swamped and mobbed afterwards. So
COVID rules at all for that one.
Yeah, no. The thing that was sort of, I guess, that I took out of this, and hopefully it doesn't sort of continue on to the next series, is the appearance of Playoff P. You know, in his first three games, you know, he was 3-for-14, 3-for-16, and 4-for-17.
Yeah.
And then game five, he erupts. You know, he shows up.
That game five score was ridiculous, 154-111.
That's insane. Like,
that's just standard time, everybody. That wasn't overtime. That's right.
That's just the regulation.
Like it was, and that shouldn't happen anyway. But you're right, you're exactly right. He did stand up in that game and blew out for 35 points. But
that's right.
I still think they're probably still working on that combination. And they've even come out and said that. I think Paul George come out and said that more.
Yeah.
And they need to work more with Kawhi in that combination.
He doesn't have to be the alpha now. Like Paul George can sort of sit back and just watch Kawhi go to work. The one thing that sort of happened too, I guess it's sort of significant but not significant in game five was the Marcus Morris I thought he deliberately stood on Doncic's ankle, mm-hmm. you know, like at the old school, what you do at primary school and stand on someone's foot and go, ha, blowout.
Yeah.
So
there's a little bit of a spite in that whole series, actually. No, that's right. all directed at Luka.
That's right. With Luka. Well, that's something that they're scared of Luka. And yeah. So they should be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they should be.
They thought, I think they come in, and a couple of them, and I'm talking like Morris and even Montrezl Harrell, they had a couple of choice words with each other. Sure. Sure. About
Montrezl Harrell, we won't go on about,
but it was just, you're right. I think they were scared of him, and I think they tried to, I guess, get under his skin because it's his first playoffs. He's, 2021, and he relished from it. Yes, they didn't win, but he still stood up. He had to. He didn't have a choice.
No, that's right. It's everything was going to be a solo trip for him. Trey Burke was going to be a little bit of instant offense. You got to hope that guys like Seth Curry are going to provide a little bit of floor spacing so he can go to work with no Porzingis there. Like Doncic's numbers for the series were 31 points, nearly 10 rebounds. And nearly 9 assists. Those are historical numbers for somebody his age in their first playoff series.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing, was at the end, game 6 was the Marcus Morris. He was ejected for that foul where he just absolutely just clobbered Doncic from behind.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. That like we said before, I think he was clearly sent out in the back end of that series to go out there and deliberately disrupt what Luka's doing.
Well, I mean, their bench depth alone, if it's someone's going to do it, you might as well get him to do it because they've got Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams and Reggie Jackson, and then there's, their depth is just well enough.
No,
I'm not saying she shouldn't do it. I'm just saying that he might as well take the hit for the team because they got enough depth there keep playing. So...
still a bit of an off move. Like it was pretty obvious that it was deliberate. Like I don't care what anybody says. Like that was the move in probably the last three games of that series. Was to clearly sort of get under Luka's skin and let's just take him right out.
I think they need I guess moving forward, how I've looked at all these sort of teams, I think they're missing Luka and Kristaps, is coming back to where he was with New York before he got weirdly traded. I think they're possibly missing a veteran not a superstar veteran, but just like a star veteran.
They could have used somebody like Andre Iguodala.
Mm. Yeah, possibly. Or someone else.
That sort of caliber player, a wing defender.
Yeah.
It makes you respect his 3-point shot if you leave him open. Mm-hmm. Just that sort of guy, a bit of a locker room leader. And even though Luka Doncic is going to be that anyway, because he's been playing professionally since he was like 15 or 16. So yeah, he's got plenty of experience, but not NBA experience. So
no.
As he goes into year 3 next year, they'll be frantically looking at players on the free agent market to see if they can, and that'd be an attractive place to go if you're a free agent.
I think so.
A very attractive place to go.
I'm pretty sure they'll re-sign him. The first one that popped in my head only because he's restricted was Brandon Ingram, which would be extremely well, but. Your boys, the Pelicans, will re-sign.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen. They've got, I seriously doubt that he's going to want to leave. And to say that, that they've got super talent there as well. But he's to play along Zion under a new coach. I think it'd be exciting for him.
The other couple ones because I had a look at it when I was sort of thinking about it. A couple of the restricted and unrestricted, Danilo Gallinari and Bogdan Bogdanovic are both free agents next year.
They could be a really good fit there. I think Gallinari would be that. He's been around a long time.
Yeah.
So he could be – the only problem would be then you'd have to push Porzingis to be that permanent center then. And whether he wants to sort of, if he's going to be in that sort of AD mold where he doesn't really want to play that true center position because AD doesn't want to play that. And even though Porzingis is 7'3", whether or not you're better off having sort of a more beefy
Andre Drummond's the other one. Like Andre Drummond.
Somebody like that. 6'11". Yeah, 6'11", a super rebounder. Can get your buckets inside. And Kristaps is going to be your more spread man. He's going to be the one to spread the floor a little bit better. So that'd be a very interesting move if they ended up acquiring somebody like Andre Drummond.
Yeah, that'd be very actually that'd be we'll talk about free agents another time. But the other thing with the whole free agent is obviously the cap's going to drop dramatically, but.
That's where the NBA can make up a little bit of money too. If teams still want to spend big, then they get that money back in luxury tax. So
Lakers have to. He's got a player option, which he'll probably decline to get more money. But they have to break the bank for him. They don't have a choice.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
They have to. I think you'd have to with AD. You'd have to break the bank.
Oh no! Absolutely. I just don't see him. I don't see him going anywhere. I think he's enjoying what he's doing there at LA as much as I hate to say it. But winning does that.
Yeah, winning does do that. Well, it depends. He might love the LA lifestyle too. So who knows? I don't know. It's probably also going to depend on what I'm sure LeBron's going to have a pitch meeting with him as well.
It'll be the passing down of the torch. It'll be Anthony Davis's team once LeBron leaves.
Yeah, exactly. The next series was the Nuggets and Utah Jazz, which went to 7 games.
These next two series were super fun.
Yeah, they were. They were really fun. I thought it was sort of going to happen. At a pinch in the Nuggets and Jazz. I didn't think it was going to happen in the Rockets and Thunder. But we'll go back to the Nuggets and Jazz. Yeah, they were pretty evenly matched team. If you look at it, the Nuggets and Jazz.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Bojan Bogdanovic missing for Utah obviously hurt them. It took a couple of games for Conley to come back in this series. I think he came back in game three, and they absolutely blew out Denver in that game. But it was basically the Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray show.
Didn't they both stand up?
They just lit up the place. Yeah, you know, Mitchell with 57 in that. Yeah, you know, in that first game,
that's the
third highest score in a playoff game ever.
Yeah, yeah.
So
wow.
It's just crazy to see that he's putting up just eyeball popping numbers. And even in that first game, you know, Murray had 36 points, Jokic had 29.
Yeah.
So it just sort of went back and forth. You know, the series was squared. You know, nobody really sort of got Utah ended up going up 3-1, and Denver fought back, won the next three games.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, you're right. It should have been a closeout by the Jazz, but yeah, the Nuggets end up coming back and sort of snatching it. It was all high scoring, and that last game was just must have been lockdown defense at 87-8.
Last game was just an absolute old school, old fashioned playoff slugfest.
Yeah, it was. It was because when I was looking at the stats, the rebounds were close enough to the points, which is pretty rare in a game.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
exactly.
With Donovan Mitchell, I always thought it was his team. I wasn't sure what Mike Conley was going to bring, but clearly, you know, it's Donovan Mitchell's team. Clearly.
It's his team. You know, Conley's just got to be that quintessential pro that I guess they want.
Pretty poor in the series, but a little bit.
I don't know. Yeah, I think he was sort of a little bit down. Like he was hurt before he come back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, he come back in game three. Mitchell and Murray both putting up 250 spots in this game. Becoming the third and fourth players in NBA history to put up 250-point games in the one series, behind – Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson. So,
well, yeah,
that's some pretty rare air right there.
That game, that was that game six, and even Donovan Mitchell was only 6 points off getting another 50. So,
no, that's right. That game six was just that game six was insane. And yeah, that's for Denver to be under the pump like they were, especially as a three seed, to get down 3-1 and then win three on the trot to come back, and it was a wild ending to that game seven as well. You know, 17 seconds to go. It's a layup. The game's tied. A couple of free throws made at the end there.
Yeah.
Mitchell tries to go one on one. He gets it stolen off him. There's a missed layup down the other end by Denver, and there's no timeouts left. Conley was the one who got the rebound and pretty much didn't really have enough time because Donovan Mitchell was open on the right wing.
Yeah, yeah.
But he just didn't have enough time, and I think the passing lane was blocked a little bit too for him to sort of get it over to him. And and Mike Conley ended up having to take a shot to win the series. And boy, it nearly went down.
Yeah, it did nearly go down.
That's a heartbreaking way to finish the series. But it just sort of typical for this, the way that this series sort of went was unreal.
Jokic was just phenomenal in that whole series. Now, nearly every game he got a double double. If I looked at it correctly, he was just he's not the flashy player, but that's fine. He doesn't need to be a flashy player.
Oh man, people are saying that. Yeah, to me, he's the greatest passing big man that a lot of players have ever seen before.
But he's also a rebounder. I get that the passing, but he also misses rebounding as well. Yeah. Like he was getting double digits in a lot of those games as well. Like especially that last one, he got 14 boards and 30 points. So that team.
He really stood up in game seven. Stood up. You know, 30 points out of the 80.
I wouldn't change, looking forward to that, like I did with the other ones, I don't think I'd change much on that side. I think that side's pretty okay. I think it's on the way up. I mean, they finished third, so and they're still obviously in this series.
Is the X factor.
And what he can do or...
And how he develops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
If he can get better over the next 2 to 3 seasons, then they really don't need to tinker too much.
And what about the
youth? You know, they've got the big guy there in Jokic.
Yeah.
They've got, Jamal Murray is starting to live up to his contract number. Gary Harris is good.
Yeah. Across the board, they're not sort of too bad.
Bench. But that's the thing. It's the Michael Porter Jr. factor, I think, that's going to tip them over the edge to being, from being a good regular season squad to being a good playoff squad.
Yeah, definitely. What about the Jazz going forward? Where do you sort of say? I mean, Conley's on a big contract, so they're not going to move that.
I don't think they need to change much either. Like, once Bogdanovich comes back next year, they've got a fairly solid starting five. Joe Ingles there as well. Jordan Clarkson was a super pickup for them to be that bench spark. You could probably go a little bit deeper with their bench and try and get a little bit more, sort of elevated play. You know, they got guys like Raul Neto and guys like that who probably are very sort of low caliber bench players. You could upgrade your depth a little bit, but their starting squad, along with Jordan Clarkson is, and as long as they still get the production out of Gobert, and Donovan Mitchell, the four of their guys on that starting squad are very good.
Well, Joe Ingles probably he was pretty quiet in that series.
Yeah, a little bit. I think he played better in spurts in the restart games.
Yeah.
In the 8 games before, but he was a bit of a non-factor in that playoff series.
But I mean, that's someone like you said with Jordan Clarkson as a wing player could have. Well, we'll probably step up in the future.
He was a great spark for them off the bench. Like, he's. I think that was an underrated signing by Utah.
Yeah, I agree. So the last series was, again, 7 games. Houston literally, and I mean literally, just getting the win in the 7th game. The 7th game was, man, it was a fun game to watch. It was 104 to 102, but it was probably the funnest series out of all of them to watch, I think, personally.
Look, and associating fun and the Houston Rockets and the way that they sort of play basketball is not really something that go together in the same sentence.
Good point.
When it's just pound the rock, pound the rock, pound the rock, step back three.
Dribble, 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 dribble.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, dribble, 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 dribble. Pass off to the corner. PJ Tucker three. Dribble, 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 dribble. Give it to Russell Westbrook. Turnover. Dribble, 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 dribble. Step back. That's just.
Did enough.
They're frustrating.
I agree, and that's why I think I liked it, because James Harden actually played some actual defense in that game.
He's been really good defensively, I think, most of this season. Like, everybody just destroys him for his defense, but especially in this series, and he come up with a massive defensive play, at the end, in game seven.
Yeah,
the block on Lou Dort on the three, which you just don't see all that often. Then as he tried to save it, Lou Dort, he was actually standing out. But as he tried to throw it back in, and then just the feats of athleticism, and James Harden sort of jumped with his legs spread, and he avoided the ball hitting him. So it was it was a pretty crazy end of game sequence in game seven.
Yeah, I think all the games except for that one sort of game blowout. I think it was 114-80 with the Rockets blowout. They were all it was all pretty close. Yeah, they
really
yeah,
close. That, I think game one was 123-108. So that was sort of, I guess, Houston trying to stamp the authority. CP3 in the first two games was pretty ordinary, but in the next five games of this series, he really stepped it up. Gilgeous Alexander was great this series. Gallinari got better as the series went on.
I think Covington, talk about underrated signings. I thought it was a trade, I suppose, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think Covington, started slow in the first two games, but in those last five, he was putting up some decent numbers, Robert Covington. So he had to play center, which is ridiculous.
It's insane.
But
he won't be able to do that in the next series.
No, he's not going to be able to do that in the next series. I still don't get them. I mean, look, it worked. They still got through with the skin of their teeth, but I don't mind him as a player. I think he's a fairly decent role player to have on your side. So, and he's getting the minutes, so clearly he can show what he can do.
No, that's right. And it was a little disappointing too. Dennis Schroeder, who I thought should have got Sixth Man of the Year.
We can name that one.
Well, it's right. It ended up being Montrezl Harrell. So. But yeah,
What constitutes the thing? I think it was Dennis Schroeder, and I don't think I picked Dennis Schroeder, but I agree. Like, if I had to look at all those three then the finalists, I would have said Dennis Schroeder was clearly, I had Derek Rose. That wasn't going to happen. Yeah, well, he was all right. Although he's standing there playing on the five. But anyway, what constitutes as a six-man award? Because I don't remember Montrezl Harrell doing enough to me compared to what Dennis Brody did.
It's that high energy. It's the getting everyone hyped. Like, he puts up okay numbers. He's a rim runner. I just think that even Lou Williams, he's got a more well-rounded offensive game. Than what Harrell sort of does. Harrell's a good rebounder as well for his size. I've sort of heard the comparisons, which are just totally disgustingly disrespectful. I've heard the comparisons of Montrezl Harrell being an undersized rebounder like Dennis Rodman. It's just like, get the F out of here with that.
No, that's no way.
That's me. Rodman, as anybody who's listened to this knows that I have a complete and utter man crush infatuation with Dennis Rodman. Always have.
Oh, I like Dennis Rodman.
It's an art.
I like Dennis Rodman. I don't have a huge crush as you do, but there's no way. You can't compare those two. Compare anybody to Dennis Rodman if I had to put my aggressively rebounds like he does. I can't think of anybody.
He could smell a rebound. Like, it was just, yeah, yeah, it's yeah.
I mean, Anthony Davis rebounds very well, but he aggressively doesn't do it like Dennis Rodman.
No, that's right. But that was the comparisons. It was the undersized good rebounder.
I can see why you would go for him straight away.
Yeah, that's right. I just don't see. Yeah, I just don't see. Montrezl Harrell getting a 38 rebound. I think Dennis Rodman's career high was a 38 rebound game. So that was not going to happen.
Do you I guess moving forward, just to finish it up with OKC, do they have to move Chris Paul's contract on because it's going to be $40 million next year?
That's big.
I know, and I know one team that's sniffing around it too.
That's a big contract.
I did read the other day that a team that could be sniffing around it is Milwaukee Bucks. So it's a huge contract. It is, but I think, I mean, moving forward, I don't know. Like Gallinari is restricted. Steven Adams is doing okay. I think you need to create Chris Paul there personally. I just don't know. That's the thing.
No, well, and yeah, you know, and what's come out sort of, you know, recently was sort of, you know, this is, yeah, very extremely recent news that that Billy Donovan and the Oklahoma City Thunder have decided to mutually part ways. So they're going to be looking for a new coach as well. So I guess Billy Donovan didn't really want to go through that rebuilding stage. That OKC look like they might be having, even though they've got 67 draft picks coming from the LA Clippers in the next couple of years. So, they're essentially worthless first round draft picks, but especially the ones that the Pels are getting from the Lakers, because they're going to be late round draft picks. Like, it just, they're worthless draft picks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they are going to be. But, I mean, who knows? Like, look, it depends how well you draft, I suppose. That's going to be the biggest thing. So, I don't know. I get what you're saying. I mean, that's just like your boys, like same as the Pelicans. They're going to have a few of our first rounders. They're going to be pretty worthless. Unless,
they are, that's right. They are going to be worthless. I don't know how they're going to parlay those into, you know, into decent players. They're going to have to, to sift through those.
Well, look, I mean, Kawhi Leonard fell very late, very, very deep in the draft, and look how good he is. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah, you got to find those gems.
That's the Spurs, though. Like, they know how to find. They know how to find those late round gems. You know, Tony Parker, I think, was 29th or 30th, the 30th pick. You know, Ginobili was a second rounder. Yeah, that's just how they ended up getting that pick from Indiana, which. Mm. So for them to pick Kawhi, I think it was it 14th or 15th, I think they got Kawhi Leonard. So it was, yeah. The draft picks that OKC are going to get from the Clippers and the draft picks that the Pelicans are going to get from LA are going to be very, very, very late 20s.
Oh, big time. Did you want to name one more award winner for this year before we finish up?
Well, there was a few that they did name. That come out during this first round. Mm-hmm. They named Ja Morant Rookie of the Year, which was a no-brainer.
Yeah, that was pretty much. I mean, that's. I think Kendrick really Nunn. Comment more on that one.
Yeah, I think Kendrick Nunn was the second in voting, and Ja Morant come out was a bit of a cheeky swipe. At the media, he got 99 out of 100 first place votes, and he sort of come out and said, "I want to know who the person is that didn't give me the number one vote and actually gave it to Zion Williamson." So that person should clearly have their voting revoked immediately, because that's just not even a contest.
No, it wasn't. The other one was that Nick Nurse was named Coach of the Year.
Nick Nurse was named Coach of the Year during the Brooklyn series. So
interesting. I guess he does deserve it purely for the fact of what he did with that team without Kawhi. So
that's right. With the loss of Kawhi and still coming out and doing what they did is very admirable. And you know, he looks like he knows. You know, he knows his stuff. You know, his X's and O's, and knows how to get the best out of his players. So,
I just think,
congratulations to him.
I just think Billy Donovan Could have polled harder. I think what he did with that squad was
exactly. I probably would have lent more towards Billy Donovan, but I think they very much overvalued, but they've taken it as, wow, look at what he's done with this squad, and they've lost Kawhi Leonard. So I think that's where that's sort of come from with that voting.
Yeah, I think so. Was there any other names?
I think it was a no-brainer, but most improved was Brandon Ingram. I think that was a bit of a no-brainer as well. He drastically improved from his last year in LA to his first year with New Orleans. So I think that was a bit of a no-brainer. I think Luka Doncic was in there as well.
I had Bam Adebayo. I think he polled
second. So and he was massive, but I just don't think it had the impact to a team, especially during the regular season that Brandon Ingram did. Even though the Pelicans didn't have the best regular season, there was always going to be a spotlight on that team with Zion Williamson, even though he wasn't there for most of the season. Mm. Whereas Miami just went about their business. And did what they did throughout the regular season.
Yeah, Miami. Yeah, Miami's gonna be very scary coming in these next sort of rounds. They're very, very good. Yeah, very, very scary team.
They're a well-oiled machine at the moment.
They are. Well, that'll do it for this first round of the NBA playoffs. Don't forget, follow us on all the socials, Twitter and Facebook, and. You can get it, as you'll see, when they're always posted, you can get our podcasts everywhere. Shout out to, and I'm firstly going to get it right, gimko.com.au, gimko.com.au. Finally got that right, so thanks, Mojo King. because they post our pods up there, so it's extremely grateful.
Yeah, no, they do well for us. I think they had an NFL break, to sort of commemorate the starting of the season coming up soon. So, and it sold out in like 45 minutes. So, people are excited about the NFL season coming up. It's very close. It's only a couple of days away. So, my bad too. Before, 34 rebounds is Dennis Rodman's career high in rebounds, not 38. So, a little bit of a correction there. I don't like sort of getting those things wrong, but that's just an insane number of rebounds. And to say that, Wilt Chamberlain, I think, had a 50 rebound game. So that's Wilt's, ridiculous.
Wilt's, yeah.
But
Wilt's,
he was just cut from a different cloth. Wilt was still
He's otherworldly because he, while Dennis Rodman had, 34 rebounds, as you say, sorry. He probably only got 2 points. Wilt had 50 rebounds and probably 50 points as well.
Yeah,
so
that's
Wilt
right. Yeah, he probably would have. Yeah, it's right. He would have
completely had otherworldly. He was absolutely ridiculous. Oh my God, he was. Yeah.
There would have been a fun era to sort of watch.
My God.
Of Wilt Chamberlain.
They talk about dominant players, you talk about Jordan and LeBron and all that. Of every little bit I've seen of him, he is extremely dominant.
It's ridiculous.
No one came close to him. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Bill Russell maybe, but Bill Russell didn't have the eye-popping numbers as what Wilt Chamberlain did.
No way. Oh, we might talk about Wilt Chamberlain one day. All right, have a go. I just think we should do what, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It was about 9 years ago, the NBA on TNT, they did a complete all-star draft of every available player. Did you ever see that?
Good grief, no.
And it was like six players. I'll just finish with it. So there's six players that drafted. Barkley had the number one pick because it went on all-star. How many all-star appearances?
Wow, so Barkley had more all-star appearances than Shaq.
No, Shaq wasn't on this one. It was probably 9 or 10 years. So it was Chris Webber, Reggie Miller, Kenny Smith, Kevin McHale, Steve Kerr, and Charles Barkley.
Oh, Barkley. Yeah, Barkley would have had probably more than double.
Yeah, okay. But we're talking
star appearances.
We're talking about Charles Barkley here. So who do you, out of every player available, who do you think he picked first?
Him?
No. No. And he's not even the obvious Michael Jordan. So he thought It's hilarious to watch. Dr. Watson on YouTube. He thought it was about All-Star, how you play All-Star, not the greatest team ever to assemble. So he picked Allen Iverson as his first pick overall.
Oh, wow.
And you watch him get castrated in that.
Oh, man, they just would have destroyed him for that. Wouldn't they have had a production meeting before they did that and go, this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, and he's still...
That's what they do on TV.
It's just classic Charles, because he kept hearing All-Star. All-Star, it was All-Star weekend. All-Star appearances. He went with that. So, and then he quickly changed everything. So, yeah, but that was... That's ridiculous, yeah. It's pretty fun to watch. It goes for about 45 minutes just to see the teams. Reggie puts a ridiculous team together. Reggie Miller gets he was third pick. And he started with Michael Jordan because goddamn Kevin McHale basically just went every Celtic player known.
Yeah, of course he would pick Larry Bird first.
Oh, no, the starting five are all Celtic players. Every single Celtic player. Even Shaq, because Shaq was a Celtic player. That was only his whole mentality was green. So
take your green hat off.
Oh, that's exactly what EJ said in that actually. Take your green hat off.
Take your green hat off. Good God.
All right. Have a good week, everyone.
All right. See you.